Don't let diaper rash come between you and your baby. Diaper rash can be one of the worst experiences your little one has to go through. Keeping their delicate skin healthy and happy shouldn't require a spatula to apply thick and goopy treatments that can be just as irritating and uncomfortable. When my oldest was little, she would get the worst diaper rash. It left me feeling so desperate to help her while also wanting something gentle on her skin. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide. It was developed by a mom who is also a doctor. When she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash, she let nothing get in her way. You can use just a small amount of Dr. Mom Butt Balm to help soothe your baby's skin and feel confident that you are making the right choice. Dr. Mom is committed to providing an ultra-premium formula for moms that won't settle when it comes to their little ones. Soothe and restore with active ingredients being dimethicone and petrolatum. You can find more about Dr. Mom Butt Balm at drmombuttbalm.com or find it on Amazon or walmart.com. Hey, Women of Strength, it's Megan, your host here at the VBAC Link. I am so excited, as usual, to get into our amazing episode today. But before we do, I wanted to share a review of the week from a member of our amazing community about a prenatal that I talk about often on the podcast. It's by Needed. The review reads, "I love the Needed powder that Megan advertises. Pretty reasonably priced compared to other whole food prenatals and makes me feel great. Also love that they use methylfolate instead of folic acid, which is really important to me. Women of Strength, I couldn't have said it better myself. I personally love and use Needed and recommend them to all of my VBAC and non-VBAC clients. We asked Needed for a discount code and are grateful they support VBAC mamas as much as we do. Please enjoy 20% off your first purchase at thisisneeded.com. Use code VBAC20. Again, head over to thisisneeded.com and get 20% off with code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com, code VBAC20. Hey, hey, Women of Strength, it is Megan, and guess what? We have a co-host today, a new co-host that has never been with us, and we're so excited that she's joining us. We have Rebecca Goldberg on our podcast today. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello.
Thank you so much for taking the time and being here with us.
Yeah, I really love the resources and the community, and I'm just thrilled to be here.
Well, we're excited, and for anyone wondering who Rebecca is, she is an amazing human being. She actually does a lot in PT, pelvic PT, and is one of our VBAC certified doulas. And she's in Georgia?
Yep. I'm in Atlanta, Decatur area.
Perfect. Decatur?
Decatur.
Decatur area. So is that kind of where you serve mainly?
Yeah. So, well, I have people who come to me from all over. Some people, you know, traveling up to an hour, hour and a half, but I actually can go to people's homes that are directly in my area. So people who are post C-section, I can come to you as early as the day that you've been discharged and work with you, deal with pain, make sure that you know what needs to happen, help you do all the things. That's where my passion really lies.
I love that. I love that. And for VBAC, how early, like for pelvic floor and stuff, how early can you start working with them?
As soon as they get home? Yeah, as soon as they've gotten home, if they're planning to get pregnant again, we can start building that into what our plans are so that we are starting that process earlier rather than later. And you're more likely to have results so that when you're ready to get pregnant, you can just get pregnant.
Love it. Awesome. Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. And you guys, as usual, we have a review of the week and you don't have to listen to me stumble upon the review. Rebecca will read it. I'm sure she'll do a lot better than I normally do.
Well, this review is from Apple Podcasts and it's by Semi Crunchy Yogi, which I love that name. The review says, "My personal VBAC journey was actually influenced directly by Megan Heaton, one of the hosts on this podcast. She was my doula with my second baby, my 10-pound VBAC baby."
Whoa. Woo! Yeah.
And so when she started this podcast, I knew it was going to be something special. I will always be passionate about VBAC and making sure women are given options, respect, and support through their birth journeys. And this podcast does just that. This podcast is so needed and addresses important myths about VBAC and birth. Thank you so much, Julie and Megan, for using your passion to support other women. You two are amazing examples of women of strength. And then there's a little heart.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. Was it semi-crunchy yoga? Yogi?
Yogi, yeah.
Yeah. That is awesome. Thank you so much.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, you guys, we have our friend Hannah from North Carolina. So if you're from North Carolina, listen up. I feel like it's so important for us to start talking about where all these women of strength are coming from, because there's so many of us out there in the world that want to know where these people are, because finding a supportive provider we know can be challenging. So we have our friend Hannah from North Carolina sharing her amazing VBAC story. And for anyone wondering a little bit more of in relation to her story, she had preeclampsia. I think actually with both. Hannah, is that correct?
Yeah. Well, my first, they qualified as gestational hypertension. And then okay. My second was preeclampsia.
So your VBAC was actually preeclamptic.
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. So, and that is something that we see a lot in our community, people wondering if VBAC is possible with preeclampsia. And we don't actually have a lot of stories on the podcast. In fact, you may be one of the first, actually,
wow,
in almost 300 episodes, which is kind of
wow.
So we're really excited to talk about this. And then you did have that CPD diagnosis, like so many of us. So yeah, I'm going to welcome you on to just share your stories.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. I've been listening for a while and I'm so excited to be here. I do live in the Triangle region of North Carolina. I'm just south of Raleigh in a town called Fuquay Varina. A lot of people probably won't recognize that name, but if you are in the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area, I do have a great recommendation for a supportive provider there.
Is that more of a rural area or is it like...
It used to be pretty rural, and just like in the last 10 to 15 years, it's exploded. And so we're getting a Target and that's a big
Yay!
Deal for us.
Every yeah. place is better with a Target.
Yes, agreed.
Awesome. Okay, yeah. So let's hear about your 6-year-old, the one that you just started listening to the podcast after.
Yeah. So just to jump in, I had my first son in July of 2017. And I just, first time mom, I went to a midwife practice, but they're midwives that deliver at the hospital that was closest to where I live. I had been seeing them for a few years just for my general well woman checkup. I liked them, felt like I had a good rapport with them. And so I stuck with that. And my pregnancy was good. I was working full time. I was a traveling sales person at the time. That got to be a little tricky towards the end. And in my third trimester, I started swelling. They were like, oh, we just need to keep an eye on this. Could be normal. If it gets coupled with high blood pressure, then, it might be concerning. So around 35 weeks, I did have some high blood pressure readings. And just as an aside, I have a history of white coat syndrome. Like even as a teenager, my blood pressure would shoot up in the office. So that's always been an issue for me. And I was concerned about that with pregnancy because I knew high blood pressure, pregnancy, high risk, and I was hoping for an intervention-free birth in the hospital.
Yeah.
So you know, I did all the things I thought, like I had a doula, I had read like Ina Maskin's
Guide to Childbirth.
Yes. So I did HypnoBabies. Like I felt very
prepared.
Yes, I felt prepared, but I think I didn't have the understanding of, like, I just heard midwife and I was like, oh, like natural birth. I didn't really research the hospital too much. So I just really didn't know what I didn't know. So at 35 weeks, they diagnosed me with the gestational hypertension. They were pretty like aggressive in their management of it. Like they told me, like, you're done working. Like you're not going back to work. You're on bed rest. Basically, they said, like, you know, you can shower, use the bathroom, make yourself food, but other than that, you should be laying down. And we will definitely induce you by your due date at the latest.
Mm. So do you remember what your blood pressure was, like what your readings were reflecting at that time?
Yes. Like, I think in the office, it would be like maybe 140 over like 85 or 90. But then at home, I had my own cuff and they were reading like normal, like 118 over 70s, stuff like that.
Interesting. So definitely some white coat syndrome maybe. And then
yes. That
they were pushing the induction when overall your pressures were probably pretty regular.
Yeah. So that was just, I don't know. It was like hard to know what was the right thing to do in that situation. Yeah. 'Cause first time mom, and like, I don't want to put my baby at risk. And then so eventually they did agree to induce me. I went in the night before my due date, and you know, I had been going in for extra monitoring. I'd had NSTs, biophysical profile, so everything was good. They just, because I had that gestational hypertension label, they wanted me to deliver by my due date. So I did go into the hospital the night before my due date. I think I was maybe like a centimeter dilated, 50% effaced. They did the whole Foley bulb overnight. You know, they thought like, oh, that's going to stay in for 12 hours. They put it in, and then within an hour and a half, it comes out and I'm 4 centimeters dilated.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, you know, it like got off to a good note, and I'm like, oh, it's shit. And they're like, oh, this is going to go great. Like, you're going to do great tomorrow. So I'm like, okay, try to get sleep. Everyone knows in the hospital, even with an Ambien, you don't get sleep. So my doula came the next morning. I believe they started Pitocin around 7 a.m. I really was hoping not to get the epidural because I just had this fear of that cascade of intervention. I did know about that. And I just felt like, okay, I'm going to try to do everything I can to keep that from happening, because a C-section was like something I was very fearful of. I'm an only child. My mom delivered me via C-section. It was a hard delivery. And I just had always kind of had a fear of that being my story. So things were going fine on the Pitocin, working through the contractions. They were just very odd about, like, they didn't want me out of the bed. And thankfully, I did have my doula there. And she was like, just stand next to the bed, sit on the birth ball. But they just were treating me like the way I would imagine someone with severe preeclampsia would be treated. And that just was not my case. Like, even they didn't really want me getting up to go to the bathroom a lot. They were telling me I couldn't walk the halls, I couldn't use the shower. Just odd. So around noon, the midwife says, hey, I want to break your water. And I said, you know, I'm really not comfortable with that. Like, I don't think I'm making a whole lot of progress. I've only been on Pitocin for a few hours. I really would rather not have my water broken. And she says, well, you're here to be induced for a reason, and we need to speed this up. So I would like to break your water.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So that's really where things started, like, going downhill for me. I didn't really understand at that time, you know, like a doula can't say like, hey, she said she doesn't want that done. She doesn't want that. But I also didn't really get like the support I needed, I guess, in that moment when I was vulnerable. I didn't really have anyone to say, hey, like, do you want to talk for a minute and like come back to this? So I did agree. I mean, I guess verbally I agreed. I didn't feel like I was agreeing, but she broke my water. And after that, I just remember things intensified so much. And I remember by around like 3 p.m. being in excruciating pain And that's when I asked for the epidural, and it took 2 hours for them to bring it. I finally got the epidural, and I just like immediately fell asleep because we'd been there for probably 20 hours at this point. So I rested.
Were you feeling like any specific discomfort, like in the back, or like were there any signs that maybe that baby would have been in like a poorer position after the floodgates opened?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. That actually will come up once the C-section is performed.
We were told
at my, I think I had a biophysical profile at 39 weeks, and the tech was like, oh, your baby's posterior. But I didn't really understand what that meant. But when he was delivered, they did say he was in the anterior position. So I just remember contractions being unbearable. And I think it was because of the level of Pitocin I was on. Like, they just ramped it up. Like, I even remember at one point the midwife saying to me, so once I'd had the epidural, I'm laying down resting. I had like asked for a peanut ball, but no one really helped me with it. Like, my doula tried to, but I don't know. It just, the nurse I got that day was not very helpful. And then my poor husband, he is like usually my rock. Like, he is so strong, but he just was like a deer in the headlights because it was his first time going through this. And it was just rough. So finally that night, 8 p.m., midwife comes and checks, and she's like, yeah, you're still only like 4 centimeters dilated. I think the baby is developing a caput. How do you say it?
A caput. Which is interesting. Mm-hmm. At 4 centimeters, do you remember how low your baby was? Because at 4 centimeters, baby getting caput, I mean, baby must have been coming low.
And that's the weird thing. He wasn't. He was still at a -2 station.
Oh, so not even engaged.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just, it and she was like, you know, I really think you need a C-section. Mm-hmm. I think your pelvis is too small. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay. Wow, like that's not something I'd ever been told in all these years I've been going to this practice. And she was like, so, you know, that would be my recommendation. And she said, I could give you one more out. And I said, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm like crying at this point. Like, in your professional opinion, do you think an hour will make a difference? And she's like, no. So again, like, I did, I guess, ultimately agree to that C-section. I signed off on it, but I'm, you know, very upset saying this isn't what I want. Like, it just was, I don't know. And I was honestly so out of it at this point. Like, it's hard to remember some of it. Yeah. As soon as I agreed, you know, they come in there, they give you the form, they are wheeling you down the hall. And there was like never really an issue of like my baby being in distress. Like, it just was kind of like, oh, you've been here for a while, you're not progressing, let's just go ahead and do a C-section. And then her commenting that my pelvis seemed to be too small. So I go to the operating room. Everything goes pretty standard, but my husband does go to stand up when they're delivering the baby. He was like brave, wanted to see it. And as the doctor goes to pull the baby out, she says, oh, I've never seen this before. And she's been in practice for 25 years. And it turned out my son had the umbilical cord wrapped around both hands and both feet, and then that was together.
Oh.
She said, oh, your baby's hogtied.
Wow.
I was like, yeah. So it's like, okay, this makes sense why he wasn't descending.
Yeah.
So he's good. Like, I'm good. I did have a hard, like, recovery, you know, just they tried to show him to me. I start, like, vomiting on the operating table, and then it just kind of gets blurry from there. Just really hard. Like, I don't remember like holding him for the first time in the recovery room. All of it's very blurry until the next morning. Yeah. But overall, like, recovery went well. I had a very hard time breastfeeding him. He was a very, very tense, tight baby, tongue tie, lip tie, all that. So that was rough.
Man, you had like a lot. There was a lot.
Yeah. It was hard.
Yeah. Knowing, it's kind of interesting because knowing that they were like, oh yeah, your baby was real wound up in here.
Mm-hmm.
That would make more sense than just diagnosing you with CPD.
Yes. So that's what I thought. And I was like, okay, you know, the midwife was saying that during labor, maybe she just thought that because I wasn't progressing, baby wasn't descending. So then at my 6-week checkup, I you know, asked to see the doctor that delivered my son, did the surgery. And I saw her and I was just kind of debriefing with her. And I said, you know, do you think like that was the reason he couldn't come out? And she was like, yeah, probably. But then like, she didn't even like really examine me. I had to ask for, I was like, are you going to like check my C-section scar? Are you going to like do an internal? Like, what am I here for? And so she was like, yeah, fine, I can do that. And she goes, oh, no, you have a flat pubic bone. You shouldn't even try to have a VBAC. And then basically like walks out of the room as I'm crying.
Oh my gosh. I have a question for Rebecca in here. Like, you know, and pelvic floor and stuff, flat pubic bones. Do you see those? And is that truly like something that is caused, you know, an issue that issues are caused?
You can't imagine so. I mean, if you think about the way that the baby comes down, like the pubic bones are very, they're not super involved. And you have the pubic symphysis, which is the little cartilage between the pubic bones. Like that gets soft, just like all of our other joints due to relaxin, which is a hormone that makes everything movable. So, you know, there are people who even have that separate. So the shape of the pubic bones, it just seems a little odd to me.
Yeah. Interesting. Because I mean, I'm thinking like, I can like put my fingers exactly where I felt when my mind did start to separate. And I have a wonky pelvis too. My pelvis goes all funky. So it's just so interesting to me to always hear that providers just jump right to your bones are not good enough.
Yeah. And that was so hard. Like, you know, to hear that, because it's like, oh, like something's wrong with me, like it's my fault. Yeah. And then a midwife that I was closer with there, when I saw her when my baby was about 6 months old for just my annual exam, I asked her about that comment. She said, oh, I think what she probably was saying is you have a narrow pelvic arch.
Okay.
I'm like, okay.
All right.
So,
yeah. I'm going to take a quick break from our episode and continue talking about our favorite prenatal line, Needed. Needed was created by two mothers and trained nutritionists who knew a better way of nurturing our bodies was needed. Nutrition is so important and has the power to change outcomes for both mamas and babies during conception, pregnancy, and beyond. They found that 95% of women in the prenatal stages have nutrient deficiencies. Most prenatal vitamins include the bare minimum nutrition based on outdated guidelines and stale research. Needed is different. They have done years of research to find out what we really need during our journeys and have done exactly that. Their products are third-party tested, backed by clinical insights from over 4,000 practitioners, and they are so thoughtful about every ingredient, using exactly what's needed in the bioavailable forms. And this is important because you and your baby deserve the best. Don't be one of the 95% of women who are not getting what they truly need in a prenatal vitamin. Consider taking or even switching to Needed and feel confident that you will be receiving radically better nutrition. As I mentioned earlier, we asked Needed for a discount code and are grateful they support our VBAC mamas as much as we do. Please enjoy 20% off your first purchase at thisisneeded.com with code VBAC20. Again, that is thisisneeded.com to get 20% off with code VBAC20. Did you go into this next pregnancy feeling doubtful of your pelvis or?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I definitely was very nervous. I mean, I remember searching like groups on Facebook or baby center app, like flat pubic bone, narrow pelvic arch, seeing like if anyone else had been diagnosed with that and gone on to successfully have a VBAC.
Right. So yeah, baby number two.
Yep. So I ended up actually, I got pregnant when my first son was about 3 years old. And I literally had just been dreaming about having a VBAC like since my first son was born. I feel like so thankful that I found your podcast, the Facebook community of the VBAC Link, and I also found my local ICANN group who just was so helpful in finding my new provider. And I switched to that new provider before I even got pregnant. just because I knew I was not going back to that first practice ever for anything.
Yeah. And that's actually something I suggest highly. Like, a lot of the times we don't think about finding that provider until we're pregnant, but finding a provider when we're not pregnant, it's kind of weird, but there's this vulnerability that we don't have. Like, we have this, like, sounds silly, but tougher skin when we're not pregnant. Like, sometimes.
Yeah,
like,
no, I totally get
we're
that.
We're in a different headspace, you know, and you're like, I already know I'm not going back to this person. Like, I'm going to find this new person and go now.
Yeah. So thankfully I did find them. The hospital was a 45-minute drive. So it was a big difference from my first, where the hospital is only like 20 minutes away, but that was so worth it to me. And I was pregnant during COVID. I got pregnant in September of 2020. So things were kind of just weird then anyway, like appointments were more spaced out. Some of them were virtual. And I feel bad saying this because I know so many people had a hard time with not having their husbands or partners come with them to appointments, but it actually was kind of nice that I didn't have to go in as much just because of my anxiety with the doctor's office. But I really did like the midwives that I was seeing at this new practice. And, you know, the issue about my blood pressure did get brought up. I had a couple high readings early on in the pregnancy. Like, I think I went to my first appointment around 13 weeks in person and definitely had a high reading. It sounded like they actually believed me this time, though. Like, when I told them about the white coat syndrome, my past, they like took my word and were like, we got it. We see it all the time. Have a blood pressure monitor at home. And if you could, your next appointment, bring it in and we'll test your blood pressure on that and on our machine just to make sure like it's accurate. So just like that, I felt so validated.
I was just going to say, that's really wonderful that your providers did that and that they just accepted you at your word. That's really beautiful.
Yeah. And I feel like that was such a difference, you know? So I feel like, you know, people talk about red flags all the time, but I felt like that was like a green flag. Like, okay, this is like someone who's actually listening to me as a patient. So things like went great. I actually got to a point where like my readings in office were normal. I think just like from feeling more relaxed, more supported, you know, I brought up the whole small pelvis thing. I had several of the midwives say like, I don't believe that. We hear that all the time. We're not going to worry about that. And so everything went great up until about 37 weeks, I got COVID. And thank God I did not have a hard time with it at all. Like, it was like a sinus infection, but I missed my 37-week appointment. And then when I went in for my 38-week appointment, my blood pressure was elevated. So that was concerning for them, given my history.
That's interesting. I'm curious if it was correlated at all or if it was just history. Your history was, because, you know, sometimes we know if we've got preeclampsia in the past, we may be more likely to have it in the future. But I'm like curious if that's related at all.
I know. And I've wondered that. And it's so hard because I don't think I'll ever definitively know. But it definitely seems odd, like, oh, you were fine at 36 weeks, you get COVID at 37 weeks, and then high blood pressure the next week. But I was also going through some other stressful things. I had a family member pass away. I had a situation with my dog that he almost passed away, and that's like my first baby. So it just, and then I broke my foot at 36 weeks pregnant.
Yeah,
I know. It sounds insane. It sounds insane. But anyway.
That's a lot to endure right before you give birth.
Yeah. So I'm like, it probably wasn't the COVID. It was probably all the stress. And sorry, I'm laughing because that's just my way of dealing with stress. But anyway, so, you know, I go to that appointment. They're like, ooh, your blood pressure is high. They did do an NST on the baby. And unfortunately, I feel like this happens to me and other people a lot. This midwife that particular day I had not met yet. And she was definitely one of the more like strict ones, I feel like. And she was like, you know, I really think you need to go to the hospital to be monitored. And I was like, well, like, let's do the NST. Let's see how that goes. Like, they had taken my blood work. I was like, can we just wait and see what the blood work comes back as? And she kind of gave me a hard time about that. Like, she was like, oh, well, you know, you don't want to leave here knowing if your baby's not okay. And I'm like, I feel like my baby's fine. I remember calling my doula on the way home, just hysterical about her saying that. And thankfully my doula was amazing and just, you know, like, don't worry about it. Like, they're checking your blood. everything will be fine. So I did go home. I rested. Thankfully, my older son was with my mother-in-law. But then that evening, I got a call and they were like, Hannah, you are showing some signs in your labs, like on my actual blood work, of like borderline preeclampsia is what they were saying. And the midwife, this was a different midwife than I had seen earlier in the day. She said, I do think you need to come in the hospital and have a baby tonight. So that was really scary for me in that moment.
Yeah, it's hard because you're like, but this is not what I wanted. But you're like, it's hard to mentally go back to the same beginning.
Yeah.
In a way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It felt like, I mean, I just remember calling my husband. He was still at work and I was just hysterical. I was like, this is going to end in a C-section again. Like, this is exactly what I was worried about. And he, you know, thankfully it was like so calming and he was like, you can't think like that. Like, let's just go, let's see what happens. So, you know, he comes home, we pack our stuff up and we drive the 45 minutes to the hospital and we get there and I'm just like very distressed, but had like the sweetest midwife who just sat on the bed with me and was like holding my hand and was like, look, like it's going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. We're going to do everything in our power to get you this feedback. Do not let this make you feel like that's not happening now. So that was so comforting. And being 38 weeks, I was not dilated at all. I think I was like maybe 50% effaced and the baby was at like minus two station. So we definitely had to do the whole like Foley bulb again, which anyone who's had that done.
So you had a Foley placed with a closed cervix.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
You're a champ. That is definitely something that is not super comfortable for the listeners to know, but it is possible, even though a lot of providers say it's not.
Yeah. And I hear that a lot, like where I don't know. I guess I just got very fortunate with the midwife who was on call. They definitely did give me some medication to help me relax because Fentanyl I was just actually Ativan. Like, I have like very bad anxiety anyway. And they gave me that to help me relax, which it did. So they got that inserted and it was so weird because like this time I was expecting the same thing that happened with my first, like, oh, it comes out an hour and a half, and it didn't. It was in for the full like 12 hours. And so the next morning they started Pitocin. Eventually I think they just like took the Foley bulb out. And I think at that point I was maybe like 3 centimeters dilated. I was on Pitocin for like 5 or 6 hours, but it was just so crazy to me because even with it being COVID times, like I was allowed to walk around the halls. I had wireless monitoring. They even let me get in the bathtub in the room. Like, it was just so different from the experience that I had at the hospital with my first. I just really like loved their process. Like, you know, they of course were kind of concerned with the preeclampsia diagnosis, but since I wasn't, like my labs were staying stable, my blood pressures weren't rising. Like, I think they're probably in the like 140s over high 80s, low 90s range, but they really did let me just take it slow since there wasn't like a major concern for me or the baby's health in regards to the blood pressure. And so I remember they even turned my Pitocin off for a little bit that afternoon. And one of the midwives was like, hey, this is something that might not work, but would you be willing to take some Tums? There is research showing that it could possibly reset your oxytocin receptors in your uterus. She was like, I remember her being like, it sounds kind of woo, but it's worth the try.
I have never heard of this. I am fascinated.
Yeah.
Resetting our oxytocin?
It's crazy. Like, the research is there. If you just Google, like, Tums,
oxytocin receptors.
Yes.
Okay. You keep sharing. I am going to dive into this just a tiny bit because this, I mean, I've been dueling for 10 years and I've never heard of this and I love it. This is cool. All right, keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So I took the Tums. We like turned the Pitocin off for a little bit. They're like, you know, just try to rest, like eat a snack. That was the other thing. They were so encouraging of me, like eating and drinking. Whereas my first birth, they were like, you can't have anything but ice chips. And so we did turn the Pitocin back on for about 6 hours that evening. And I think at the end of that day, so this was like the first full day of induction, I was still around like 4 centimeters. I had a new nurse come on, a new midwife come on. And they were just so awesome. Like, I definitely had like an emotional breakdown at that point. My doula had been with me and my husband all day. She went home for the evening to get some rest. And they were like, you know, what do you want to do? Like, you're looking good. Baby's looking good. Like, my water was still intact at that point. And I was like, I just want to sleep tonight. I was like, I know if I do not sleep tonight, I am not going to have the energy to finish this birth. And it was amazing because the charge nurse did not want me to stop the Pitocin. And my midwife and my nurse, like, basically went to bat for me. And they're like, no, she's fine. We're going to give her Benadryl. We're going to let her sleep. We're turning the Pitocin off. And that's what we did. I slept. I actually like got to rest that night. They came back at 5 a.m., rehung the pit. I did agree to my water being broken at 8 a.m. because, you know, at this point, we've been in the hospital for almost 36 hours. Like, baby needs to come out. But like that, just in and of itself, like, I felt like that was my choice. No one ever pressured me. It was all my choice. So I did agree to my water being broken. That was around probably 9 a.m. And I just continued laboring. And it was great. Like, I remember I had like my bathroom, there's no windows in there. And I had like my fairy lights and my music playing, and my doula had like essential oils diffusing. And that was like my cave. Like, I felt like I could go in there and just like shut out being at the hospital and really focus on labor, sit on the toilet. And eventually I did get to a point around 1 o'clock where I was starting to have a hard time coping. And I was like, you know, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And I gave it another hour and I was like, okay, like I need the epidural. And I did get the epidural around 2 o'clock that day. But it was just amazing because even having the epidural, like, my nurse and doula, like, the nurses were like, hey, let's put you in throne position. Let's pull out the stirrups and get one leg up in 30 minutes. Let's switch to the other leg. Let's get the peanut ball. So I felt like they were doing all these things to help me that I had never experienced in my first birth. Like, I felt like they wanted me to have the birth that I was desiring so badly, like almost as much as I did.
I love them already. I don't even know them.
I know. Well, can I say who it is?
Yes, please do. Yes.
So the hospital I was at was actually the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, the hospital there. And it was the UNC midwives was my practice that I delivered with. But like, even the nurses at that hospital are just amazing. They were like all literal angels. I love them.
Make sure that they're on our provider list.
Yes. Yes. They are wonderful. So, you know, that went on, I think around like maybe 6 o'clock I was checked and I was like hanging around 5 centimeters. And I got really discouraged at that point. I was like, you know, maybe like I just can't do it. Like, maybe my body's just not going to dilate. But they weren't worried. You know, they just like kept helping me move. And then I do remember shift change happened. New nurse comes on, new midwife. This was probably like the fifth shift change by the time we had been in there. And the midwife comes in, checks me. She's like, oh, you're 6 centimeters. And I remember so many stories of women being like, the first 5 are the hardest. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, maybe that's true. And then literally at 9:40, the midwife comes back, checks me, and like, she's like, how far dilated do you hope you are? And I'm thinking, well, gosh, like, I hope at least like a 7 or an 8. And she like had like a tear and she's like, you're 10 centimeters.
Oh, yay.
Yes. And I just start like bawling. And it was so crazy because my first son was born at 9:42 p.m. And that was like right about when I found out I was 10 centimeters. And I just like, for some reason, knew if I could make it to 10 centimeters, I knew I could push my baby out. I don't like the pushing him out was not the part that I was scared of. It was like, oh, is my body going to be able to get to that point? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember my husband and doula being so excited because they bring in like the cart and they brought in a mirror and I start pushing. And it's just so crazy thinking back to that, like seeing that happening. And I pushed for 20 minutes and both of my boys were surprised. We didn't know what gender they would be. 20 minutes later, my second beautiful baby boy is born, healthy, screaming, put directly on my chest. And it was like one of the best moments of my entire life.
Oh my gosh. I love this story. I love all the support and all the love and all the amp that was just completely surrounded around you. And then you had the confidence in your body at that end when you're like, okay, I got this. I got this in 20 minutes.
Like, yeah, I was like, oh, here's my small pelvis with my flat pubic bone.
Yeah. I love that so much. And you know what? I just was looking at our provider list, and guess what? It says UNC Midwives, they're on our list. And it says specifically they're also VBAC after 2 C-section supportive. So
yeah, I think that's the only hospital in our area that generally will support after 2 cesareans.
So awesome. Well, I'm glad that they are on the list. I wanted to make sure, because they sound phenomenal. Like, I would love to connect with one of them and just have them on the podcast, honestly, and say, like, talk to me about your unit and your guys' way of thinking. And, you know, this is the way so many people want to birth when they're birthing in the hospital, but we don't have these options and we don't have these systems and we don't have these policies or these beliefs or whatever, because they sound amazing.
They are. Yeah. And I know they are on Instagram, just at UNC Midwives. So they're easy to find.
Okay. I might be messaging them.
And if anyone's Tar Heels fans out there, you know, that was a big portion too. My husband's like, our baby was born in Chapel Hill. So
that's a
big thing for North Carolina people.
Hey, that is so awesome. Oh my gosh. So yeah. Any advice that you would give to someone who, especially even like preeclamptic, like induction and all these things, but like, do you have any advice that you would give to our listeners?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I like number one, and I feel like you guys really help express this, but a supportive provider. And, you know, evidence shows that induction for VBAC can be safe. Of course, do we want an unnecessary induction? No, not ever. But in a situation like mine where preeclampsia is a concern, that shouldn't exclude you from being able to have a VBAC. Mm-hmm. So I think asking a provider those questions, like maybe before you even get pregnant, like, would you induce for VBAC? Under what circumstances? What is your VBAC rate? That's what I would tell women who are looking for that.
Love that. And I agree. I would echo, like, asking those questions and not being scared to ask them, because mm-hmm. you deserve to know. And you deserve to find the provider that's going to connect with you personally and your desires, because we know, like, through talking with Dr. Fox and all these other providers, you know, not every provider is the same, and that's okay. That doesn't make them a bad provider. They just may not be supportive within your desires.
Mm-hmm.
With your first one, I was going to say, I feel like you kind of had more of that midwife mentality.
Yes. Yeah. I found that word after I had him, and I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Yes. What were you going to say?
Just going back to preeclampsia, the other thing I would say that I didn't know a whole lot about with my second or first pregnancy was how much nutrition affects preeclampsia. And I know I believe you've had someone on your podcast that's discussed that before, just how, you know, like, there's so many things we're told, like, you shouldn't eat salt, and like, actually that's not true. Like, you know, we shouldn't be eating processed food, but like, women in pregnancy need salt. And so I did find there's the Brewer diet. I think that can be, I've heard amazing stories about that from women who have had preeclampsia in the past. There is a nutritionist I follow on Instagram. She's Aloha Nutrition, and she is pregnant with twins right now. I think she's like almost 40 weeks, and her blood pressure has been awesome. And she attributes it to beetroot.
Okay. Yes. I've had like a client who had preeclampsia with her first really, really early, and like beets and liver and like these types of things, like,
yes,
really impact. And I mean, that's why I personally, I'm throwing in a shameless plug here, but like, that's why I personally love Needed so much, because they have mm-hmm. really like dove in to like find out what nutrients you need and help you get it, because there's so many of these nutrients we're lacking in our normal day-to-day foods, and it's overwhelming to like learn about them and yes. find them and then find a good resource, you know, of where to get them. And it really can be impactful, just like Aloha Nutrition is showing, like, it's very common with twins to get that high blood pressure.
Yeah. So I think nutrition is huge. And I think that's just one of the really big problems, is like, we're not being looked at as a whole person when we're pregnant. It's just, we're being looked at, oh, you have preeclampsia, oh, this is what the research shows. But so much of that research is outdated, and they're not focusing on those foundations like nutrition that's so important during pregnancy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And another, and we did, it was Lily Nichols who I had on, but yes. She knows more about like gestational diabetes, but she also has her book for pregnancy in general. And I would highly suggest checking that book out.
I recommend it to all pregnant moms. It's on my bookshelf. I love it.
Same. She really is just so incredible. I mean, I could talk to her for hours and hours and hours on nutrition and in pregnancy and how impactful it is. I mean, yeah, it's just so hard. And we have so much processed stuff going on in our world, and it's easy and it's fast, but yeah, we're lacking a lot. So I love that you put that note in. And then Rebecca, on the end of this, I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about pelvic floor and how C-sections can actually impact the pelvic floor health, and then, you know, ways to address it, what we can do, and how we can plan for VBAC moving forward.
Yeah, I just wanted to back up and just touch on this idea of having a small pelvis, that your pelvis, actually the outlet can grow by 30%, which is huge, as you're giving birth, as long as your sacrum, which is like your tailbone and your lower pelvis, is able to move, which is why being off the bed is the place to be, because then everything can move and your body can actually grow and expand. Your bones do. That's one of the reasons we have relaxin. And so, like, so many people are just like, oh yeah, I was told I had a small pelvis. And I'm like, well, were you on your back? And they're like, oh yes, I was. And I was like, well, then yes, your pelvis was likely closed. It can open.
Actually physically smaller.
Yeah. Yes. And the bones could not move to make more space for the baby. So it's just really interesting. A lot of people actually, surprisingly, believe that a C-section is a way to save your pelvic floor from any sort of injury or trauma when having children. And that is not the case. I don't know if either of you have heard that before.
Yeah, actually I had a really petite Asian client who a provider, she had a C-section. She really wanted a VBAC. Oh, I have so many feelings about this birth, but they literally told her that if she wanted to poop herself for the rest of her life, that could have a VBAC. And if not, then they would highly suggest a C-section, because that would be the only way to avoid her having severe incontinence with her bowels.
That's awful.
It terrified her.
That is fear-mongering first.
As a doula sitting there watching it, and I had already watched them preparing the C-section in the hall previously. I had like kind of seen this cesarean coming, and I like kind of warned them, like, they're preparing this, like, nothing is showing that we need to do this. But that was one of their reasons. And she was terrified. And I just said, that's not necessarily true. But it stuck with her. It impacted her so badly that she said, okay, let's do it.
I'm really sorry that she had that experience.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, people think, you know, again, this idea that like your pelvic floor is spared, but you can actually still have pelvic dysfunction. Even if you have a C-section, you can still have leaking. You can still have pain with sex. You can still have constipation issues, because people forget you spent the last 10 months growing this baby and your pelvic floor was working to support it. So it is affected regardless of how you birth, which is why really every person who births should be getting some sort of assessment by a pelvic PT. So I don't know if you're aware of that, but then if you have scar tissue because you birthed via C-section, the scar tissue can actually impede all sorts of things. The three most common side effects are hip and back pain, pain with sex, and urgency and frequency with urination, which doesn't sound great and nobody really talks about. So by addressing this,
normalize it.
Yeah, agreed. It's just, you had a baby, so that's what you should expect. We should expect better. We should always expect better.
Mm-hmm.
And so by addressing that scar tissue, you can actually manage a lot of those things and hit them off long before they become a problem.
Yeah, I agree. It's It's interesting. I didn't know about scar massage or pelvic PT a ton until after my second C-section. But then I started doing, you know, all the things, and I have a lot of adhesions. Like, she was like, she could feel them internally. And then we would work my scar, and like my back pain would reduce. And I did notice a difference during sex and things like that. And she was like, no, we need to keep let's work this out for your vaginal birth, because you also have trauma in general, which can sometimes be held in the pelvic floor. So we have physical trauma and adhesions being created. And then I had like emotional trauma, and a lot of that I carried in my pelvic floor.
And it's very common for people to carry that in their pelvic floor, because our society says peeing and pooping and sex is all taboo. So maybe you didn't learn about it. Maybe yes, you're having sex, but it's a shameful thing for you because of your upbringing. There are a lot of reasons that can contribute to this pelvic floor dysfunction. Constipation is actually one of the biggest indications that you may have a long stage 1 labor, just because you may have a tight pelvic floor, which means you may have difficulty relaxing it. And let's be real, you don't need a strong pelvic floor to birth a baby. You need a relaxed pelvic floor. You need to let the muscles get out of the way so that that baby can come out, because the pelvic floor is not pushing the baby out. Your uterus is.
Uterus, yeah. Yeah. It's all fascinating. I highly suggest checking out a pelvic floor specialist, no matter if you've had a vaginal birth or not, especially if you've had a C-section, because like she said, it doesn't mean that we don't have things to work through. And even if we've had a C-section too, like, I want to point out that we could also have scar tissue on the cervix from things like IUPCs being placed, or if we had ever had a forceps birth, or just in general, like, things can happen where we've got cervical scarring that needs to be worked through. So for our VBAC, we can progress. And you know, I love hearing that Hannah was able to like go in and get a Foley with a closed cervix and have this beautiful VBAC. But sometimes that is definitely hard to like get a provider to even do those interventions. And then if we have scar tissue on top of that, that can also cause things to be a little harder.
One more point about scar tissue. Even if you've had your appendix out or you've had a laparoscopic surgery, those sorts of things can actually affect the position of the baby, can cause breech positioning, or can cause you discomfort because the scar tissue is not allowing your body to expand as it needs to. And so even those things are some really wonderful things that pelvic PTs can help you with during pregnancy, even if you haven't had a C-section.
Love it. Awesome. Well, if you're in the Georgia area, definitely check out Dr. Rebecca. And if you're in the North Carolina area, definitely go check out UNC Midwives, right? Is that
Yep, that's them.
UNC Midwives. And keep listening here, because these stories just like this and information just like this, this is what we want to do. This is what we want to provide for you. And if you have a certain topic or something like that that you are looking for, please email us at info@thevbacklink.com, because we want to try to make sure we get that on the show. Thank you guys so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.